Campus FM presents Classic Texts, produced by Vicky Spiteri, presented by Margaret Ajus.
Hello and welcome to Classic Texts. In this series of programmes, we shall be looking at a variety of English literature texts and their authors. We have also lined up a number of guests who will be giving us short commentaries about the works in question. Today's programme will be dealing with Alice in Wonderland, that wonderfully surreal children's story packed with the most eccentric characters ever, created by Lewis Carroll. Alice's adventures in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass are among the most charming and celebrated of all children's books, and their appeal remains undiminished to a vast adult audience. The music for this programme is being taken from the Walt Disney film Alice in Wonderland from the year 1951. Who was Lewis Carroll? The Reverend Charles Ludwig Dodgson Elias Lewis Carroll was an extraordinary man who led three lives. One was a shy, unsociable mathematics don, the second was a renowned child photographer, and that for which he is best known is the brilliant author of the inventive Alice stories. Charles Dodgson was born on January 27th, 1832, in Cheshire, the eldest in a family of 11 children, and lived an idyllic childhood. From an early age, he showed academic brilliance. At Rugby, he seems to have suffered school bullying, marked out by his severe stammer, his studiousness, and his poor performance in sports. In 1851, he entered Christchurch, his father's old college, and 2 days later, his mother died, a loss he felt acutely. Hard-working, serious, and devout, he seemed to embody all the virtues of Victorian England. Remaining aloof from his contemporaries, he nevertheless delighted in the company of children. Only with children did he lose his acute nervousness and stammer, and was light-hearted, witty, and imaginative. He befriended children easily, and carried a bag full of games to attract their interest. Dodgson attained a first-class degree in mathematics. From 1856, he pursued photography single-mindedly, becoming one of the foremost portrait photographers of his time, and the best photographer of children in the 19th century.
Why, you're a cat.
A Cheshire cat. All a mimsy. Oh, where the border goes.
Oh, wait. Don't go, please.
Very well. Third course.
Oh, no. Thank you, but I just wanted to ask you which way I ought to go.
Well, that depends on where you want to get to.
Oh, it really doesn't matter. As long as I can...
Then
It really doesn't matter which way you go.
Dodgson's first meeting with 4-year-old Alice Liddell was when he was invited by the dean, her father, to photograph her and her two sisters. There is a tendency to think, because the children were photographed in the nude, there might have been some sexual deviancy involved, but there is no evidence which points to this. This is also corroborated by the letters of friendship that many of his children's friends later wrote to him as adults. Moreover, photography of nude children was a common genre at that time. However, wagging tongues could have been the reason why he gave up photography suddenly and forever. Dodgson, however, achieved fame as a writer under the pen name Lewis Carroll. He started writing early in little magazines, where he developed his talent for nonsense verse and humorous short stories. Yeats was the first to publish a version of Jabberwocky in 1856, although it was, of course, with Alice that Lewis Carroll became famous. It was a phenomenal success, assuring Dodgson of a comfortable income for the rest of his life. Together, Alice and Through the Looking Glass sold 180,000 copies in Dodgson's lifetime, although literary success and fame did not change the patter on his life. In term time, he wrote mathematical texts and spent holidays in Eastbourne. With his extra income, he was able to resign from his lectureship and take on the job of curator at Christ Church. Fame as an author widened his circle of friends and acquaintances, and when invited to the households, Carroll entertained their children as always with stories, games and puzzles. But despite the adulation of children and adults alike, he was a lonely man. In his 60s, Dodgson suffered from an illness which prevented him from walking, but in the end, it was an attack of bronchitis that proved fatal.
Who are you?
Well, I hardly know, sir. I changed so many times since this morning, you see.
I do not see. Explain yourself.
I'm afraid I can't explain myself, sir, because I'm not myself, you know.
I do not know.
Well, I can't put it any more clearly, for it isn't clear to me.
You? Who are you?
Well, don't you think you ought to tell me who you are first?
Why?
Oh, dear. Everything is so confusing.
It is not.
Well, it is to me.
Why?
Well, I can't remember things as I used to. And
recite.
Yes, sir. How doth the little busy bee improve each other?
Stop! That is not spoken correctly. It goes. How doth the little crocodile improve his shining tail and pour the water of the Nile on every golden scale? How cheerfully he seems to grin, how neatly spreads his claws, and welcomes little fishes in with gently smiling jaws.
Well, I must say, I've never heard it that way before.
I know, I have improved it.
Well, if you ask me.
You? Who are you?
Alice is sitting with her sister on a bank, bored and sleepy. Suddenly, a white rabbit runs by in a state of great excitement. Alice follows the rabbit down a hole and falls for what seems an eternity to arrive in strange surroundings where everything becomes curiouser and curiouser. She drinks from a bottle labelled Drink Me and shrinks. A cake marked Eat Me makes her grow. her tears of frustration become a huge pool out of which she climbs in the company of other creatures, including a duck, dodo, and mouse. Alice finds it impossible to keep the same size for 10 minutes together until she meets a large blue caterpillar sitting on a mushroom. She meets the Cheshire Cat and the sneezing, brutish Duchess, whose baby turns into a pig. The Mad Hatter's tea party contributes to more fantasy, as the March Hare and the Dormouse are permanently locked into a 6 o'clock tea time. At the Queen of Hearts garden party, everyone is playing croquet, where the mallets are live flamingos, the balls are curled-up hedgehogs, and all the guests are under constant threat of execution. The rest of the action is explained away at the end by Alice waking from a dream.
Are you ready for your sentence?
Sentence? But there must be a verdict first.
Sentence first, verdict afterwards.
Lewis Carroll loved exploring ideas that are logical in principle but absurd in practice. An early essay of his comments that a stopped clock is preferable to one that loses a minute a day, since at least the stopped clock is correct twice a day, while the other is never accurate. Tweedledum and Tweedledee are paragons of logic. If it was so, it might be, and if it were so, it would be, but as it isn't, it ain't. In Looking Glass Land, one has to walk away from things in order to go towards them. Alice and the Red Queen must run as fast as they can to stay in the same place, and the White Queen has backward memory. Carol's deep interest in symbolic logic is a meeting point for maths and language in Alice and Through the Looking Glass. With us today to give us a commentary on the logic and mathematical equations in these books is Dr. Gordon Parch from the Department of Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence at the University of Malta.
Charles Dodgson was not very well known as a mathematician, even if he's quite well known today, especially after his work on Alice in Wonderland. However, his love and his work on mathematics and logic shows through in these books. Before we actually go through some of these things that appear in the books which refer to mathematics and logic, it might be useful to have a short digression as to what mathematics really is. I mean, most people associate mathematics with reasoning about numbers and reasoning about objects which refer to numbers. However, mathematics can really be formulated as discipline in which one tries to define things and reason about them in a rigorous or formal way to reach conclusions about objects which have been defined in a very precise manner. Essentially, when one is doing mathematics, when one is defining new mathematical objects, one does not really care about how well they describe reality. But what one really cares is that one is describing objects in a precise enough manner so as to be able to reason about them. And this shows through in quite a lot of places in Alice in Wonderland, as we'll see later. It's also useful to see the context in which Alice in Wonderland was written. Alice in Wonderland was written in 1865, and in that period there was a revolution in mathematical thought, one could say. Just a short decade earlier, in 1854, Boole published a very influential book, The Laws of Thought, in which he described ways and means of describing logic and truth statements in a way which can be reasoned in a what is called an algebraic manner, in which one could reason about the objects of logic in a way in which one does not really have to know the meaning of the objects one is dealing with, but rather simply use these laws that he prescribed in the book. There were other important mathematicians and mathematics going on in the same period. For instance, Riemann, where a lot of work was being done by Riemann and his colleagues about differentiability or reasoning about how quickly things change. But in general, over this period, one of the most important aspects was the importance given to symbols, to names, and references to objects in mathematics. The birth of algebra can be traced mainly back to in the 19th century when Alice in Wonderland was written. And this importance of names, references, symbols, etc. shows through in this book, as we'll see. So one of the first things that strikes anyone is the recurrent use of puns and jokes based on the ambiguity of language in the books. This is a common way in which mathematicians usually joke. I mean, it's probably related to the fact that mathematics is much more precise and therefore a lot of the ambiguity does not arise. But puns can be found right through the whole book, I mean, starting with the tail of the mouse and, you know, it's all over the place. However, more than that, one also finds in the book very interesting visual puns, where one sees things and one has various interpretations of what is going on. For instance, one of the first cases where this happens is when Alice is falling down deep, and you know, she looks around and notes that she's been falling for a long time, and you know, what one would usually conclude from this is that the deep is very well. However, what Lewis Carroll says is, you know, either the well was very deep or she fell very slowly, which are two equally good explanations of the same observation that Alice was experiencing. And this is seen elsewhere. For instance, there's also the case where Alice tries different keys to open and close, to unlock the doors. But she tried a key, for instance, and to quote Lewis Carroll, Alice's first idea was that this might belong to one of the doors of the hall, but alas, either the locks were too large or the key was too small. Again, you know, the fact that the key was too small is an equally valid explanation as the locks being too large. And this happens in a number of other places. I mean, same thing with her tears suddenly becoming a whole sea, etc. But Lewis Carroll deals with other aspects of mathematics. I mean, logic being his main field appears very frequently in the book. I mean, one of the things that fascinated Charles Judson or Lewis Carroll is the use of logic fallacies, where one uses what seems to be a reasonable logic argument to reach wrong conclusions. When Alice found a bottle not marked with poison, and her reasoning was that, you know, usually bottle marked poison leads to, as Lewis Carroll says, you know, it will certainly disagree with you sooner or later. However, she says, okay, but the bottle is not marked poison, so that shouldn't happen. And this is a common logical fallacy. You know, if from something happening we can conclude that something else will happen, if the first thing doesn't happen, doesn't mean that the second won't happen, despite the fact that most people use this reasoning very frequently. This sort of argument where one tries to find reasonable explanations, or rather seemingly reasonable explanations, to reach conclusions which are not true, appear elsewhere. For instance, there's the case when she suddenly becomes much smaller. So, you know, when one becomes smaller, it is clear that, you know, the chin will become much closer to the foot. And if that happens very fast, then, you know, the rate of change at which this will happen will be very quick, and the chin will reach, or rather approach, the foot very quickly. And as Alice became smaller and smaller, the distance became smaller and smaller and closer to zero, to actually them hitting each other. And Lewis Carroll puts in a small joke, for instance, when this happens. The next moment, she felt a violent blow underneath her chin because it had struck her foot. This reasoning, I mean, sounds plausible. I mean, the reasoning that, you know, if two things approach each other and continue approaching each other until their distance is approaching, always approaching zero, I mean, they will eventually hit each other. It sounds like a reasonable explanation. And yet, it is an incorrect explanation. This thing happens, appears quite frequently in the books. At one point, actually, Lewis Carroll does point out these logic fallacies. At the Mad Hatter's tea party, Alice is asked a question, and she says, "That is what I mean. I usually mean what I say," which she says is the same as saying what you mean. But Mad Hatter says, "No, that's not the same at all. Just because you say what you mean, that's not the same as meaning what you say." And he goes on to give a couple of interesting examples why that is not the case. For instance, you know, he says, you might as well say, actually this is the Dormouse now who said this, that "I breathe when I sleep" is the same as saying "I sleep when I breathe." That's obviously not the same. So, at one point, actually, we see Lewis Carroll explaining how these logic fallacies do appear. But there are various aspects of logic that are treated in the books. In Through the Looking Glass, which, by the way, as is quite clear from the book, it's basically a chess game, with Alice being a pawn, eventually being promoted to a queen. There's a comment at the end, you know, where Alice encounters the black kitten, which was the red queen, where she points out that, you know, kittens always pair, and therefore they have no way of saying yes or no. This is a very important observation in logic. If you cannot express the difference between truth and falsity, if you've got only one way of describing an object, then obviously there is no way in which you can express important statements. Logic, references to names and meanings, etc., happens throughout the book. As you read through it, there are various references to this, and, you know, most cases you cannot miss them. To close off, I wanted to refer to a very interesting observation, which is the case with the Cheshire Cat's grin, where you've got a grin but no cat. A very interesting observation made by Martin Gardner in his annotated Alice in Wonderland, which I recommend to all interested readers because it's got very interesting annotations about the book, is where he refers to the grin as, without a cat, being very similar to pure mathematics, where mathematicians refer and talk about objects without necessarily looking at the reality which they may or may not depict. This is a very elegant description of what mathematics is, describing objects in a precise manner without necessarily having a concrete counterpart in reality.
Roses red. Who's been painting my roses red? Who dares to paint with vulgar paint the royal flower bed? for painting my roses red. Someone will lose his head.
We have come to the end of our programme. Credits for this programme go to the Great Writers Magazine, the New Horizons publication, Lewis Carroll and Alice, and also to the AV Library at the CCT, University of Malta. Join us next week for another programme in these series.
You have just listened to Classic Texts, produced by Vicky Spiteri, presented by Margaret Ajuso.